Welcome aboard, you people. It is the Starship Rocon Show with Anna DeVlantis for another day of broadcast. That's what's going on right here, right now.
Both a little bit tardier than usual today because we were paying such close attention to the John McCain tributes today. Very moving.
You know, I was thinking about this, that at least in Joe Biden's eulogy, there was this sense that he was eulogizing the American ideal.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to me.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, that here's a Democrat eulogizing a Republican, talking about the fact that both of them in 1996 were castigated by their leadership in the Senate for spending too much time with each other and being seen in the well of the Senate or in the Senate chambers sitting next to each other.
Because they weren't of the same party, right? Is that why they were casting some sort of negative light on that? That wasn't allowed?
No. And the and he said that was the moment where everything changed.
Uh-huh.
And it was the 1990s. It was the run-up to the election of 1996. It was Clinton. It was Clinton against the Republicans who had that big red wave in 1994 in the midterm elections. And it had really become a duel of parties as opposed to ideas.
Isn't that telling? Foreshadowing.
Yes. Because Bill Clinton turned out to be a pretty conservative Democrat when it came to policy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it was, they started with, they were going to do the health care overhaul. And American conservatives have been very much against any kind of health care reform. They want the free market to rule there. And American liberals have been about, you know, trying to create health care for everybody, European style system.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow the two have never been able to find a ground under which they can stand and both get something out of it. Right. Because now, I mean, we're still in this process of after Obamacare, of trying to get the whole thing turned around. And that was the essential. Why is that important today? Because that was the essential moment of politics in America that really changed everything. And is this, and what you saw today was this outpouring. Fascinating that John McCain had asked. Mm-hmm. He choreographed all of this.
I know.
Choreographed the whole week.
He said he had to be talked into it at first, that he didn't want a lot of pomp and circumstance surrounded his death. And when people explained to him that, no, you've had this impact on America, there will be this, you just should play an active role in how it looks and what you want it to look like.
Here's a little bit of Joe Biden.
John understood that America was first and foremost an idea. Audacious and risky, organized around not tribe but around ideals. Think of how he approached every issue. The ideals that Americans have rallied around for over 200 years, the ideals that the world has repaired to, an idea enshrined in the Constitution. Sounds corny. We hold these truths self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. To John, those words had meaning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't just about putting on a three-cornered hat and screaming about people in a park. It was really about living the life, living the deal, going and doing the service and trying to do the work of the people of the United States, and sometimes agreeing with people that you didn't initially agree with just to get to a compromise.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes it was about holding your ground when you knew the other side was absolutely taking us in the wrong direction.
Theirs was just a fascinating friendship. It transcended politics, no question. But he said they both believed in the promise of America. So they could agree to disagree, but that they were optimists about the future of America. And it was moving to hear them talk about it. Biden said, I was elected as very young, I was 29, and the next youngest person in the Senate was 14 years older. That was John McCain, and we became fast friends. And of course, later in life, they had the unfortunate personal connection of Beau Biden, his son, being afflicted with the same disease and brain tumor that eventually took McCain's life.
You know, some of the other people who spoke, mm-hmm. were pretty interesting. His chief of staff, long-serving chief of staff, yeah. talking about his first day on the job.
It was great.
And it was a very, very comic. It was very comic because it was McCain was often very scatterbrained, too. He made a joke about him driving the wrong way away from them when leaving the Capitol. And it was, we knew he was going the wrong way, and he had to turn around. Everybody, like, waved goodbye to him, and then he had to turn around. They had to wave goodbye to him again.
Didn't he say that he also swore at him or something? Or somebody came up and said how John McCain just swore at him because he was so angry with them, but that they knew then, you know, that there's some kind of connection because he wasn't afraid to speak his mind.
Yeah.
And you respected him for
it. Right. I mean, there were so many moments. Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
How was this? The Arizona Cardinal, mm-hmm. great. Larry Fitzgerald became very dear friends with John McCain and went back to Vietnam hmm. to go walk the steps of John McCain in Hanoi at the Hanoi Hilton.
Right.
I mean, you learn things about humanity today watching these folks talk. And another guy who was like the head of a labor union party in Arizona mm-hmm. who became one of his best friends. It was a Mexican American.
Mm-hmm.
And he and John McCain asked him to be on his campaign committee. And the guy's like, "Don't you know I'm like a Democrat, right?" And he goes, "Yeah, I need to know your answer right now, when he was running in 2000 for president.
That's great.
And he goes, "Okay, I'm in." Yeah, and so...
And how about his 106-year-old mother, Roberta McCain, there just looking as, you know, just amazingly great health, saying that her son, John, always said, "No, you know what, I'm going to live a long time just to be, you know, look at my mom.
Right.
And she said, you know, no matter at what age, it's difficult to bury your own child.
Yeah. Yeah, and the family, obviously, beside themselves. All right, Ben Bradley is going to take us back local here. Coming up in a few minutes, we're going to talk about that explosion that happened on the south side, the far south side. You know what it was? It was a poo explosion.
I just want you
to stop and think about that for a second. There was exploding poo.
They said the stench could be felt and smelt throughout the neighborhood around that area.
Oh, man.
The jokes write themselves.
Yeah. I know, but it's tragic, guys. I mean, it's pretty serious what happened.
Yeah. Yes, it is. That's true, but it's awful what is happening. So Ben will give us the latest on that, as well as some 911 tapes that Channel 9 has just gotten a hold of following the death of two toddlers mm-hmm. on the Kankakee River in Northwest Indiana. It's really startling stuff. We'll have that. And then Michael Steele joins us after Judy's news at the bottom of the hour. Speaking of that, what's coming up, Judy?
A dramatic rescue after that explosion in Chicago.
VLS traffic being brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation.
Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater and Joe Donlin, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9.
All right, Ben Bradley joins us right now, and let's talk about that explosion in the far south side of Chicago. Wow.
Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to think for more than 2 hours there, that one worker was trapped. Firefighters very deliberately not only removing debris to reach him, but he was trapped underneath a concrete beam.
Oh, my gosh.
So they had to not just lift the beam and alleviate the pressure, but they also tunneled underneath him in an effort to shore up the area around him and get him out. At last word, we think he's in critical condition. Our Mike Lowe and Patrick Elwood are both at the scene. They're going to have live updates for us coming up on the WGN News at 4. Yeah, but we watched that.
What can you tell us about about how it actually happened?
The Tribune just reported that it may have been a methane gas leak that prompted the explosion. We don't have that independently confirmed.
And this whole facility, it's a water reclamation district facility, and what it is, a water reclamation facility, I should say. And it is, and this was basically a sludge processing plant. And with it, which means sludge means, you know.
Yes, we know. Right?
Yeah, it means bad. Yeah,
we got it.
Yeah, and what they do is they try to treat it to get the water out of it that can actually get reclaimed back into the system.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I prefer not to think about
it. I know that's a process that I just.
But there
it's
are
like
chemicals involved in that process, and you know, if
not into the drinking water system, into the river system, which is
separate,
makes
right.
me feel somewhat better. But
they said residents in the area had been smelling this methane-like odor for even a couple of days. Is that something you had heard too?
You know, we hadn't heard that. Nancy Liu was out there as this was developing and, you know, talked with a couple of people on the scene, you know, who described the entire neighborhood shaking to give you a sense of, you know, of this blast. And this is a fairly large facility. It dates back to the 1920s, not this particular building, but this whole treatment plant facility on the city's far south side along 130th Street. So, you know, whether or not somebody was doing work and it ignited methane gas, whether or not you know, other chemicals that are used in this process somehow interacted, we don't know yet. But boy, those rescues are going to be the big story of the day because they really showed Chicago firefighters for what they are, right?
Yeah, you know, how about
not,
it?
Not just running in, but also in a very professional, very painstaking, very practiced way.
Extracting these
extracting
people.
Those people. Yeah.
Well, one of the workers had been taken away at ambulance by ambulance. I saw an interview with him where he apparently had told his wife that he's okay, he's in the ambulance, but that one of his buddies was still trapped because he saw him get buried, basically, in the kind of debris you're talking about.
Yeah, that was the worker's wife who spoke with Nancy Liu. Imagine getting that call from her husband.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. But to your knowledge, all of the people who were buried in that rubble are out?
Yes.
Not looking for anybody?
Right, both,
just
right?
After
we're
1
two?
O'clock. Yeah, there were two people who were initially reported as trapped. One guy, we think, was that husband of the woman we spoke with.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was that second person we're now seeing on CLTV here, this video from SkyCam 9 showing that rescue as dozens of firefighters lift this person out of the facility.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about the other very disturbing tape that you've got. You've gotten some 911 tape from the from this incident in Northwest Indiana where two young kids perished, right?
Right. It happened last week along the Kankakee River, right along the Illinois-Indiana border. Two kids, a four-year-old and a two-year-old, they were brothers, were seen, you know, wading into the water. And there were two guys who were fishing who called police. And we've got the 911 calls in which one of the guys says, hey, you need to get out here. I'm concerned that their father is on heroin. He appears to just be passing out. They interacted briefly before going to separate areas. He said he couldn't even hook the worm on the hook for his kid. He just kept hitting himself in the finger, and then he would pass out, and then he would come to. So the 911 calls detail over many minutes this frantic effort to get police to the scene for these kids.
Let me just give you a little flavor of this.
Canton County 911, what is the location of the emergency?
I'm actually on the Kankakee River at the Indiana-Illinois border.
Okay.
And there's a truck that pulled up here a minute ago. Dude come walking past with his two kids. I offered him a fishing pole to fish with his kids.
Mm-hmm.
I gave him a night crawler, and I noticed he started passing out while he was putting the night crawler on the hook. He goes to falling asleep with the two kids next to the water, passing out on heroin and shit.
Yeah.
Passing out on heroin. And then, you know, that witness said he was a little apprehensive about getting involved because, you know, he said the father and another guy there appeared to be pretty high on drugs. And then he saw the father kind of snap to jump in the water up and down, up and down, up and down, which apparently if you're high on heroin, you suddenly become, you know, pretty overheated. He said that's what the dad was doing, and then he would pass out again. And you hear in these 911 calls that we're going to play for you on the WGN News at 4, this witness trying to direct police to the scene. It took 9 minutes or more to get police there because this is a pretty rural county. I just talked to the sheriff who said, you know, he's got two deputies on duty, and sometimes if they're at a far point in the county, they got to travel 40 miles to get to a scene. And in the time from that first 911 call to then the witness kind of loses sight of the kids and then tries to get over to that side of the river, those two kids went under while the dad was apparently incapacitated from drugs. And that dad has now been charged with neglect that resulted in death. And he confessed to detectives, though, has since pled not guilty. But we'll have much more of that just heartbreaking tape. You know, what do you do in that scenario?
Amazing.
You know, do you intervene? Do you run over there and say to this father, no, these kids are coming with me.
Right. I'll watch your kids for you. Or what do you mm-hmm. say?
Yeah.
But the call started coming in while he could still see the children were okay, right? That he was basically flagging this for authorities that something bad could happen here.
And it did, unfortunately, Anna.
Oh.
All right, more of that coming up tonight on the WGN TV News. Thank you, Ben.
You got it.
Judy Pellack's got the WGN News, being brought to you by Townstone Financial. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis right here, 720 WGN. Mm-hmm. Taking you through the afternoon here until Northwestern football takes to the field. That will be something.
Go Cats!
Yeah, it's the their opener, their season opener tonight. Yes. In West Lafayette, taking on Purdue. All right, let's talk to Michael Steele. You know him, you love him, from this radio program primarily. I don't know, I think he's done some other things too. I'm not sure what. All right, now, Chairman... I have a lot of questions for you. Let's talk a little bit about John McCain and your relationship with him. Now, we haven't talked to you since last week. It was announced he was going to be giving up, you know, treating the cancer, which one day after that announcement was made, they announced that he had passed away. And the tributes have been pouring in. And today, I thought the funeral that was held in Arizona today, which featured his chief of staff, it featured a union organizer from Arizona of Mexican descent, Larry Fitzgerald, the wide receiver,
an African American football player,
right,
in the National Football League,
and then Joe Biden, and
a Democrat,
right. So you had two Democrats. Larry Fitzgerald, I don't know what his politics are, and a Republican chief of staff. It was a pretty amazing bipartisan moment, and they all told the same story. They all centered on the same theme, which was that it's about values. It's not about personal gain.
Yeah, I think that is the overarching message that's come out of the passing of Senator McCain. Is a reflection point where you stop and you take stock. Generally, when someone passes, whether it's a friend, family member, or someone that you follow in the news, at some point in the course of that story, you do stop and reflect on what that person meant to you personally, or what you've come to know and respect about that person, or if what makes you curious about them. And I think for McCain, it was that point, that central point with all of those stories that were told. You're absolutely right. The value narrative was the most important theme, if you will, that came out. And it spoke to these times. This was so much about this week that John McCain is really kind of flipping the bird to the president in so many ways. When Larry Fitzgerald stood up, I was just thinking, that's so perfect. That is just so perfect.
NFL player.
Black NFL player, right, on the stage at the funeral, to which the president himself was not invited.
Correct.
It was just a lesson by McCain in trying to humble a president who is someone who cannot be humbled. Because even as before we got to this point, the story started coming out that the president is in the White House brooding over the fact that McCain's death is being treated as if he were president of the United States. Mm-hmm. And it just tells you just how vain and just so self-absorbed he is, that's what he's concerned about.
Unforgiving self-regard is what has been on display. At least that's what he's shown us.
Right, and that goes back to that narrative about values. It is what you value, because what you value is how you live out your life. And what John McCain valued was this country, and what he valued was the people in this country. And he tried every day to live that out in his life. Imperfectly, yes, but at least he knew what the center core was about, and that's what he tried to stay true to. Not a whole lot of people in our political system today can say that.
Yeah, man, that is so true. Your relationship with him?
It was good. I've had a couple of moments where I just, just had relived privately this John McCain-isms. One of my favorites was running into him at National Airport when all the wheels had come off of his presidential campaign. He'd fired 90% of his staff. He had no money coming in. And he had made the personal decision with his family to continue running for president. So I get to the airport. I'm going up to the county gate 35A. Folks have taken flights out of that gate know what that is at National Airport. It's an infamous gate. And so you run into everybody there, basically. Anybody who's everybody is there at some point. So I'm standing there waiting at the counter as this man with his back to me. And I get up to the counter to check on my flight, and it's John McCain. This man was standing, United States Senator, running for President of the United States, there at the airport by himself, no what? Staff. He had an overnight bag. And this was the kicker. I looked up and said, "Hey, Senator, how's it going?" And he gave me that John McCain smile. He said, "Terrific." And he said, "Now, if I could only catch this flight." He was on the standby list.
Yeah. And he's ready
waiting
for president.
To catch a flight to go to a presidential campaign event.
Because he couldn't fly anymore because there was no money left to fly, right?
That's right. There was no money left to even book a plane, book a flight to get there in time. So he came up to the airport to see if he could fly standby to get to this meet and greet event. That was quintessential John McCain. There were no handlers or body people or anybody around him to make sure he got on that flight. His self-determination, his perseverance put him there. He got on the flight. He got a flight. And he went and did his thing. And the next thing you know, 3 months later, he's the nominee of the party. So it says a lot about the man that I think from a moment as alone as that, as a political player, that is a very lonely moment to have to fire staff and no money but decide you still want to go on, and there's no one who wants to go with you.
Mark McKinnon, you know, it's from that era. Mm-hmm. Mark McKinnon tells that story. Told us that story about McKinnon coming back to the campaign at that point because McKinnon said he would not work on the general campaign, because he'd gotten to know Barack Obama and didn't want to do the negative ads.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to be off, you know, out of the business for at least that part of the election cycle in 2008.
Right.
So what he did, but he did in those days, he would meet John McCain wherever he was campaigning around the country and try to help him out, right, at the end of the primary,
right.
Which is, you know, it's its own story that the guy who was totally left for dead, right, becomes the nominee of the party.
Mm-hmm.
That's a quintessential John McCain story.
It is.
But he tells that amazing story of how John McCain used to have his staff people brush his hair because he can't lift his arms. The grievous injuries he suffered as a prisoner of war. And when you stop and you think about that, I mean, here's a guy who was, you know, essentially a prisoner of war, mm-hmm. and, you know, could have easily died in Vietnam, rose from that to become this, you know, this character on the American's stage, mm-hmm. that was always trying to do the right thing, regardless of how awful the ravages of terrorism against the United States were, and especially on September 11th. You know, he would not stand by torturing the Al Qaeda prisoners because he knew what that was like. It's about the value system of that as opposed to the politics of it. And it was, you know, to this day, and we've spent so much time now just being angry and scared and having to, you know, lash out. The picture of the president that's being used so often now is from earlier this week when he got, you know, he was sitting in his desk and he got kind of mad.
With his arms folded with this rough look on his face.
Right, where he's drawing his chin back toward his neck, and it's sort of like, I'm going to make myself as, you know, as compact as possible in case somebody tries to hit me.
Yeah, well,
it's kind of the way you look at it.
That's what a petulant 10-year-old does when you tell him he can't do something. Correct. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, I've done it myself. I do it sometimes 3 or 4 times a day during here. And so I get that this is the moment that we sit in. It's, you know, what do we want our politics to be like, regardless of your party, regardless of your fealty to whatever, you know, whether it was Barack Obama or Donald Trump or whatever. You stop and you look at, we have to come back to a sense of core values. And I thought Joe Biden brought that home again, Democrat brought that home well today.
He did.
At a Republican funeral. Right. You know, but it's because this is really about this moment. And I'll tell you what's going to be amazing is the event that's going to be held on Saturday. There's at the National Cathedral. Yeah. That's where Barack Obama is going to speak. And that is where George W. Bush is going to speak. And to me, the most moving thing is going to be at the Naval Academy for the interment.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't even know if that's going to be televised. But
yeah, I don't know. They're saying that is going to be a private ceremony. So my suspicion is typically that's going to be away from the cameras. So they will, after Saturday's very last public ceremonies, the family will have a private one at the Naval Academy, which that cemetery is a beautiful cemetery, and it is a gorgeous location on the Severn River. Overlooking the academy, and it's appropriate. It is. When I heard that he was going to be buried there, I got choked up about it because I served on the Naval Academy board for a number of years and have a deep affinity for the place. And it was like, wow, that's so perfect. And he's going to be buried next to Admiral Chuck Larson, who was his dear friend. And so it's appropriate end to a wonderful story, but I think the for me, guys, the story you touched at the very beginning of this conversation is about the values, and it's a real pushback against the current corrosion of our culture and our value system, and it's forcing us to ask ourselves, do you want to be more like McCain or Trump?
Michael,
and that's what it boils down to.
It does, and I love hearing the speeches about people saying we've got to find common ground. And yet, I do want to ask you about the Republican Party and the idea that Trump-backed candidates are doing pretty well in these primaries. You saw in Florida and Arizona, and in Evansville, Indiana tonight, he's going to be there for a big rally. The lines are long already. People waiting out in the hot sun for that rally. He's supporting yet another candidate there, and it seems as if he still has a lot of power in terms of these, you know, the candidates that are really doing well. What do you make of that?
That no one ever doubted P.T. Barnum could pack him in. No one ever doubted that. So,
but what about the candidates and how they're doing in these primaries? The ones that seem to be allying themselves with Trump are doing well. You would think that a more moderate might do well.
Well, here's the test. I give you primary. Winning a primary is only the first part of the game. It's like a skirmish. It's a battle. That's not the war. The war is won at the ballot box on November 6th. So these candidates who have aligned themselves. And Florida is going to be a very interesting tipping point for this. It's just a very stark race between Gillum, who is the Democratic progressive candidate, Bernie Sanders,
DeSantis.
I was thinking of Santis, but DeSantis on the Republican side, who is a Trump-backed candidate. So we're going to see how voters respond to that. If you want to look at that race, you could sum it up this way. They are candidates in any other circumstances would not be elected. They're not electable. Because
that's really true.
Gillum is too progressive for Florida, and DeSantis has too much Trump around his neck. So Now that the voters are going to be forced to make that choice, it'll be very interesting to see how they do it. And that is going to be one, you could sum it up, that's a value proposition. What do you value here?
Florida is in a bad situation here, because there are a couple of things that are legitimate debates that Florida needs to have about environmental protections. There's this whole red tide situation. You know, there is some science that ties it to a certain type of pesticide that is being used. And the question is, are they going to try to regulate that? They do have Florida has one of the worst public transportation systems in the as a populous state. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, there's very little light rail. There's not a whole lot of other rail. You don't have, you know, the bus systems in Southeast Florida are not particularly good, and so they're talking now. They have to have, you know, real conversations about what they want to do, and their highways are falling apart in places because they don't have an income tax and they don't spend a ton of money on it. And
right.
That's been some of their secret sauce, which is drawn that population down there. Now the population has to decide what they want to do,
right.
And they don't really have either candidate that I think is capable of
prepared to do it.
Yeah, capable of drawing those gigantic projects and bringing them across.
Right.
And you did have guys like Rick Scott who could have done it, but chose not to do it. The Trump moment has become so big. There's a commercial. This DeSantis guy ran a commercial where he's reading his child from The Art of the Deal, a bedtime story.
And his kid's like four.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like making America great again. It's like so on the nose. It is embarrassing. And, you know, I'm sure this Gillum is a nice kid. He only got 36% in the primary. He doesn't have a chance of winning this thing. There are no numbers that are going to be able to support him, I don't think, because he barely got out of the Democratic primary. So I just don't see him being, the answer here.
I think you're right there. I think that what people need to understand, I'll tell you this down and just remember that I said it.
All right.
So when
okay.
you start seeing poll numbers and you know, I come on your show and you start talking about the poll numbers, just remember people are lying. Because there's going to be a whole lot of lying going on that race in Florida.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. People are lying.
That's not going to be honest. They're not going to be honest with pollsters about Gillum. They're not going to be honest with pollsters about DeSantis.
Right.
And that's exactly how, Gillum kind of made his way through. In addition to that, how the pollsters cover the election, young people were not polled very much. They were underpolled in that election. In the Democratic primary, and yet when you go and you look at their numbers, their turnout, they overperformed.
Okay, we'll see if that happens in general. It's going to be, listen, these next couple of months, you know, we're going to have a couple days off, everybody's going to, you know, try to enjoy themselves,
mm-hmm.
And then on Tuesday, we hit the ground running, and we run all the way through November in what will be the craziest political season until this season in 2020. That's going to be crazier.
Yeah.
But right now, it's going to be crazy town. So get ready for yourself.
Exactly.
All right. Michael, have a great weekend. Thank you so much for being with us.
Hey, one more thing before I go.
Yeah.
I want to let you guys know, I've launched a new podcast. I started my own podcast. This is a lot of crazy fun I'm having. It's called Man of Steel.
Check it
out on iTunes or Stitcher. It's a lot of fun. We've already had Scaramucci on The Mooch.
Oh, yeah.
Come on. That was a lot of fun. Yeah. So it's good. The Man of Steel. Check it out.
All right, Man of Steel. I'm waiting for my invite. Thank you very much, Michael. Appreciate it. Thanks. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye, Michael.
All right, let's check in with Judy. What's happening at the top of the hour?
Senator John McCain making his final flight to Washington.
Violetta. Tom Skilling being brought to us by PermaSeal Basement Systems. That Judy just said something because she likes to always give us the lake water temperature because she...
There are swimmers out there.
Wants to go... I think it's about you wanting to swim.
What is the temperature again? Let's hear it again. The temperature is 73 degrees.
73 degrees. Now, Tom, is that temperature down from the high?
Yeah, it is. It's been as warm as 81 this season. And in fact, if you average across 8 sites that take the water temperatures from Northwest Indiana through here, the average of all of them is 68.3 degrees. And that's down. It was up around 74, 75. So
is it because of the sunlight? Is that
I think we're just seeing the different sunlight, and also shorter days are taking their toll.
The lake knows.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Lie to the lake.
No.
No.
And right now it's 64 out at the crib. If Judy wants
you mean my house?
Swim out there.
Oh.
No, not that one.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And,
different crib.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Judy might want to go out to the crib.
Yeah.
Well, it's so much warmer than the air.
It is. And Judy, 68. If you're really ambitious, you can go out to the NOAA Mid-Lake Buoy, east of Kenosha.
NOAA Mid-Lake Buoy. I loved his work in the late 19th century.
Yes.
You can get a great drink out there.
72 out there. Yeah, you can sit out there and bob with the anemometers.
With the buoys.
Yeah,
on the buoy. Mm-hmm.
I like the buoys.
Buoy bobbing.
Noah Mitlick buoy. I honest to God, I am going to create a character that is going to be a film critic or art critic or something named Noah Mitlick buoy.
You got to. You just have to now.
And his segment can be Hooey with the buoy.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. All right. Noah Mitlick buoy. We've had a great summer. I cannot complain because time marches on. If the summer stopped, I'd be dead. So that would be, it's better than we.
Well,
we
it beats the alternative, doesn't it?
It does beat the alternative of not getting to here.
Yes.
So
here's an interesting stat. We're 1.1 degrees warmer this summer than last, and we've had more than twice the number of 90 degree days. So what's there to complain about?
There isn't. As far as I'm concerned, in terms of that, unless, of course, you want to look at just sort of the global situation, which probably is not so great.
No, it's not.
Because it is even more dramatic this year than it has been last year. Now, the North America has been spared so far.
Well, we've had the wildfires out west and record heat out there. We've had record rains around the on the East Coast. And then we've had wildfire smoke all over the place.
Right, so we got spared, I should say.
Yes,
we got spared here, other than being a little bit warmer with crazy weather. And we haven't had that kind of hurricane season that we had feared yet. It's still early in the hurricane season, but it's still, you know, that's, you get to September and you haven't had, you know, a bunch of majors come through. You're feeling pretty good about it.
Two things going on there. The formation zone, the area out in the eastern Atlantic, is running cooler than average. In fact, it's the coolest since 1995. And then we have El Nino developing out in the equatorial Pacific, but that strengthens the upper level winds over the Atlantic basin, so it tends to decrease the number of hurricanes. Having said that, there's a wave coming off Africa now that will develop into a hurricane from all indications in the next few days. Now, that's way out in the eastern Atlantic, and too early to say that it will have any impact on anybody. Although the Azores, they're worried about it. But, yeah, you're right. It's been a very quiet season. And that's typical of El Nino years. And also the eastern Pacific then, conversely, becomes very active during an El Nino year.
Yeah. So I'm feeling good about it, at least for those of us in the Midwest. for example, you mentioned the wildfires. Did you see the story that the air in Spokane, Washington, is worse than it is in Beijing right now. I know.
It's also they're comparing it to the air in some of the places in India. And what's ironic about
because of this, the wildfires.
Yeah. This and what's insidious about wildfire smoke is it's these little tiny particulates that tend to bury themselves deep in the lungs of people who breathe it. So it's a real hazard. And it's also ironic that that's an area which we used to think of as being the sort, you know, the site of incredibly clean
great outdoorsy kind of culture and just clean air. You're right. That's what you associate. Cleanest. Now they're moving like football practice indoors and schools. So, you know, reacting to it.
And this stuff travels. They found it up on glacial ice and snow. It's changing the color of Arctic ice. Its albedo or reflectivity. That and maybe accelerating the rate at which ice is melting, because this has been happening faster than even the modeling had suggested. So, and there was a glaciologist up in Greenland who looked out across the snow over time, and he said, you know, I don't think this is white as it used to be. So they took samples of it and looked at what's in the top layer of snow, and they found particulates that originated from two sources, from China and also from wildfires burning across North America. So, and in Siberia, too, for that matter.
I know we got to let you go here, but so let's do the big final weekend forecast for summer.
Well, it's going to get more humid, Ro, and we've got more clouds in our future. It won't rain continuously, but there'll be some thunderstorms around, and there's a jet stream slicing across the area, so some of these storms could be active on Saturday night. This area's outlook for possible excessive rainfall again in parts of the area, and also a marginal risk of severe weather. Having said that, it won't be an all-day rain. There'll be spells of rainfall, and I think Sunday and Monday the coverage on the rainfall thins out. And at that time, that ought to allow us to get up to close to 90 on Sunday and 91 on Labor Day. So it'll be a nice warm holiday weekend, probably about 87 and muggy on Saturday with these little storms roaming the area.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, this has been a beautiful summer.
It has.
It has.
We've had good of the three major summer weekends where people are doing outdoor things or they're having people over or whatever it is.
Memorial Day, July 4th, and Labor Day.
Yeah, we've been lucky. So it looks like we're going to go 3 for 3 here. You don't always get that, especially even on Memorial Day, right, where you can get Memorial Day where it's snowing. You know, that's the worst. So
Well, more good weekends to come, too.
Anna and I are just impressed as heck at your take on the weather here, because we've had some moments there where we've wondered.
It's fabulous right now. I'm doing what's
a thing.
Here.
I'm doing it's just for today only. Yes. Heading into a long weekend. I'm excited about the long weekend. I know that I keep saying we're hitting the ground running on Tuesday like craziness. So it feels like it's back to school now. And when Tuesday hits, because this fall, I can promise you, is going to be one of the wackiest news falls we have ever seen.
That's a good point. The election coming up.
Buckle up.
Exactly.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Hey, guys, I won't talk to you tomorrow, so have a wonderful, and I think you're off, too.
Yes, we are.
Well, and Anna, you too.
Me
well,
too.
Guys, have a wonderful Labor Day weekend.
Thanks, Tom.
You bet.
You too, Tom.
Thanks, Anna.
All right, we'll see Tom next week. All right, let's check in now. Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
Trump stumps in Indiana.
Feel at it.
Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Matera, and Joe Donlin weeknights on WGN-TV News at 9.
So I got it right there,
Your boy, has he called you recently, you and Kat?
Nope.
Your friend, your best friend, BFF, bestie?
I know, he's real busy, isn't he?
I was in his backyard last night and looking through his window. He looks happy. Looks like he's doing well, but he looks like he misses us, if you ask me.
Yeah.
It was a little chilly out there, huh?
It was a little chilly. It was a little cool. You know, fall's here, but whatever it takes to see my guy.
And get your friendship bracelet to him once and for all.
That's right.
Hey, Joe!
Joe!
A little cold out here, Joe. Remember me? That sports guy.
He played 9 holes of golf with me before I had to leave, or you did, or somebody did.
Yeah. You guys should have invited him to the open house.
It's more like 9 and a half.
I think you did.
Yeah, oh yeah, we did.
We did, multiple
times. The open house yesterday that was here was really quite an event. Very well attended.
It was awesome.
We had friends of the WGN. We had some listeners. We had some, and that was by invitation. You had to sign up for that because we have because we got important security here to keep us out. And we've got a bunch of other media folks, people in the business that wanted to come by and see the new WGN digs.
Yeah,
and it was really a lot of fun. And I have to say it was very impressive. And Violetta, like all of these events, whether we do it for our show or anything else, she was putting on the event. Thank you for coming to my party. Thank you so much.
It was so nice to see everybody. It was fun. There was karaoke. There was
bacon wrapped dates.
Yes,
those were dynamite.
All the food being walked around. There was a full set bar.
Yeah.
I mean, dance floor. Actually, no, there wasn't a dance floor, but you could dance wherever.
She
you
made
were
a dance floor, though.
A lot of booze left over in the fridge, guys.
Oh.
It's dangerous at a radio
station. It's a pro tip.
I was actually serving people once the bar shut down from that fridge.
I noticed. Now, we have our own Carnarvon wagon in the office, in the show office.
Which everyone was admiring, by the way. Like, what's that?
And it's all behind glass, and we have it, like, locked up. Because I knew that if they ran out of booze, that they were going to start rolling over to that.
No question.
Yeah. Are you sure it was locked? Because some people were talking about the great booze they were getting off that car.
What?
Yeah, someone did say
that. Better,
I heard that, too.
Better make a
Is that all full
check.
Of water now? Did Violetta get to all the bottles?
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to make it look like the brown liquor, but where there's a will, there's
Who
a way.
Oh, boy. All right.
It wasn't Violetta. It was some other coworkers.
Huh. Interesting. Great party, though.
See, hear that? Not always my fault, Ro.
I don't really believe that, but okay.
Not my fault.
Yeah. For the first time ever, she's going to try to claim innocence.
I'm going to stick to that story.
Interesting.
I loved how everyone was pretending to work yesterday during the show. That's what I thought was fun. Like, it's like everyone's flitting out into the hallway, socializing, and then 1 minute before, pretending that we've engaged fully in the content.
Well, I couldn't.
First of all, we were the only ones working. You do know that.
That
right?
was hard.
We
that was hard to watch
working.
A party
yeah.
in front of your eyes.
I was just beckoning the servers in with the food, so it was pretty hilarious. Didn't you see him behind me on the camera?
Yeah.
Right in the middle of a segment, I had a server actually try to hand me a pate of some sort. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm working over here.
I was able to do the news with the bacon in my mouth.
I did hear that.
I grabbed the crab ball and what was the other thing they had? that. Oh, that avocado salad. Yeah, it's delicious.
All delicious. Anyway, the point here is that we want to thank everybody who came here and made it a great success. And,
thank you.
And
yes.
The future of radio is solid here at WGN. I mean, that's the most important thing. I can't say that this is true everywhere else, but it is certainly true here. And people were so nice. That's the thing about GN. It's so different than any other institution I have ever been associated with in this business, mm-hmm. which is people are happy to be here, yes. and the people who come in are happy to be around it. And it's like, there's a nice calm feeling. You go anywhere else, and literally at a party like that, one anchor will murder another anchor, and then they have to have one of those murder parties where they figure out who did it. And then they don't report on it.
It was nothing like that. It was such a good feeling in the air. Everybody was in good spirits, having fun. It was truly fun.
And we got to play News or Ruse. This was on the web yesterday, but we got to play News or Ruse yesterday with Steve Cochran and Bill Leff.
It was great to have them on with you guys.
Yeah.
It was so fun.
So it was like a little different
feel. It was okay.
Oh, what do you mean it was okay? Because you weren't playing?
Judy lost.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm glad Bill won,
and not mm-hmm. Cochran, because that would have been really hurtful. But
I just knew Bill's
good.
Bill is the sneaky one. Yes. Bill is he's one of those guys who's like, you know, quiet, but like observes everything.
Yes.
Knows so exactly fun, what's so going
smart.
On.
He has
so
a head
smart.
Of useless information.
But
it's useful for News or Ruse.
He likes to pretend like he's not thinking about important things, but then when it came to News or Ruse, he knew every answer. It was like boom.
You
knew what story was made up and what story wasn't. Don't kid yourself here, Judy. Don't kid yourself.
He was a pro. You're right. Yep. Yeah. So now I feel much better. There's no way I could have won against him.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. And Cochran is like, I don't like this game. I don't like it. I'm out of here.
Yeah, he was not having it.
I feel like he was concerned for us. He's like, is this what you guys do all the time?
Yeah. This is how we spend our
We're
days.
Like, concerned or jealous.
All right. Oh, Judy. All right, coming up.
Steve and I go way back.
Steve Stone is, speaking of Steve's, is going to get us set up for the Boston weekend at the White Sox, right? You got the Red Sox in town for Labor Day weekend.
Kopech Day tomorrow.
Yep, that's going to be something. And we'll also get you ready for Northwestern football and the Bears tonight. We got some thoughts on that as well.
Preseason?
The Bears, there will not be a single human being you've ever heard of on the Bears wearing a uniform tonight.
Good.
They're literally
they won't get hurt. Then.
The Bears are now going through the parking lot at Soldier Field and asking all the bigger guys, the guys who look either fast or big, to put on a uniform and then show up tonight.
James Daniels is one guy you should watch because he might end up being the starter.
We'll explain it. We'll explain all that. Stay right. Don't do anything. Judy Pilak's got the WGN news right now, being brought to you by Cars for Kids. Brokaw Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Steve
can
Stone.
I do a radio show here?
Yes, you can. Steve Stone on baseball, brought to you by Let Us Entertain You Restaurants.
Yes, indeed. And today I went to a wonderful place. I know you haven't heard about it. It was called Ramen San.
Oh,
it was a great place to go for lunch. I'm addicted to the Japanese mustard, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it's really Japanese. It's not like made in a
like
a little chemical factory on the south side. This is really the best. It's really from Japan. It's amazing.
And all the toppings
there.
On your table are things you don't recognize, but you pour it on your food and it tastes so good.
Yeah,
really good.
Awesome stuff.
Yeah, they also have that. They have the Asahi on draft where the actual Asahi in the keg is room temperature. Mm-hmm. The lines that take it to the tap mm-hmm. that are super freeze.
Oh, wow.
So when it gets there, it's the cold. It's almost like ice crystal cold when it gets into the glass, and it is so smooth and so delicious. It's just the craziest thing you ever had in your life.
Mm, yeah. Love it.
That's that good. So all right, well, I hate to we're gilding the lily here, but we might as well do it. Hey, you know, the Sox have been a lot of fun to watch over the last couple of weeks, and now Boston comes into town, best team in all of baseball. And it's kind of fun to see, you know, not that there'll be spoilers because Boston's pretty much headed to the playoffs, right? But it's fun to but it's fun to see them, do you learn? Do you think, Steve, when you see a team as great as the Red Sox are this year, if you're a young ascendant core of players, are you looking at them to learn something?
No, I don't think actually that the White Sox younger players are looking at the Red Sox as something that is going to teach them anything. But I think they're looking at the Red Sox team to aspire to get to where that team is. And the Red Sox did it in very similar fashion to the way the our Sox are trying to do it, in that they had a lot of young players from their organization that they brought up through. They picked up the occasional free agent, which helped them. They made the good trades based on having all those young kids. I mean, they got Chris Sale based on the fact that they had Moncada and Kopech and Basabi ready to go, and they decided to move them to get somebody that they felt could help them win the World Series, and Chris Sale is that kind of pitcher. So I think the Sox are learning something, and that is simply if you play a good defensive game and get good starting pitching, you're going to be in that game. Then, of course, it's going to be your bullpen that's going to make it a determining factor as will you win the game or not. But just to be in games, I think we're seeing with the Sox winning 11 of their last 15, catching the baseball, throwing it very well in the starting rotation, having some pretty good spots out of the bullpen, scoring just enough to be able to get it done. And bear in mind, doing this without Abreu, this team is understanding now that maybe, just maybe, there is a little light at the end of the tunnel. I think the building process is very painful, but right now we're starting to see some of the benefits of taking that couple steps back to take five steps forward.
Hello, Steve. I almost hesitate to ask you this because I think I've been asking you this since spring training.
Oh, no.
But rosters expand in baseball in just a couple days. The other night, the Durham Bulls decided to use four outfielders to try to stop Eloy Jimenez because he's absolutely mashing down. That's a true story.
Not even legal.
Really?
Not even legal.
They put four outfielders out there. He put it to the warning track, almost put it over the fence. White Sox fans are getting a little antsy. They're thrilled to see Kopech up. They're kind of anxious to see Eloy get called up. If he does get called up, this is probably when it would make sense, when rosters expand in a couple days, September 1st. I'll just ask you straight up, do you think it's going to happen this year, Eloy Jimenez on the big league club?
Well, I don't want to ruin your Christmas by all of a sudden, you know, wiping away all hope. But I would think if you had a choice, you would love to bring him up. But if you were dealing with reality, you would say he wouldn't get here this year. There's no doubt that he has shown that he can really play. He can hit it with the best of them. I think he's got Major League star written all over him. But I don't think he's going to get here this year. I'm not sure exactly when it is going to be that he is. But you know, it's just one of those things. The fans would love to see a whole lot of those prospects. I just don't think he's going to be one of the guys. I could be wrong. I didn't think Kopech would get here when he did, but certainly he hasn't suffered from coming to the major league.
No.
His stuff still looks pretty good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's exciting. I mean, there was a lot of electricity for our fans in that ball game that Kopech threw. I mean, I think you could feel it. It was electric around the ballpark. Unfortunately, it was only two innings, but then he went out the second time and threw real well. I'm anxious to see each and every time he goes out. But don't forget something, that if you want to see really good pitching, come out and see Carlos Rodon pitching. Right now he's throwing as well as anybody in baseball.
Right.
Lucas Giolito is throwing very well. Look, he's 10-9. I understand the ERA is up there, but he's 10-9 for a team that's 26, 27 games, whatever it is, under 500. I mean, that's actually a remarkable year. So he's gotten a whole lot better as this year has moved along. We saw Lopez yesterday go out and throw the ball exceptionally well. So slowly the starting rotation is starting to show our fans what it's going to look like in the not-too-distant future. And right now, I think there's a lot of real happy people associated with the Chicago White Sox. I think they're seeing, like I say, that little glimmer of hope, that light at the end of the tunnel. I think we're seeing just the start of it now.
Yeah. Now, what do you do with Eloy Jimenez in the offseason? What does he do there? And when he does come to spring training, I know that's like right on Labor Day weekend, I'm talking about what spring training is going to be like. But when he comes to spring training, are you treating him as though he is going to be part of the team that comes to Chicago, or is he going back to Charlotte?
Well, I don't think you're going to do anything different to treat him. He's going to get his at-bats. He's going to play as much as he's going to play. And then most likely he's going to go back to AAA for a while before you bring him up to stay. That's what I think will happen. But I'm not sure how much. Yeah, the offseason for me, what I would do, and I'm pretty sure that the Sox will do something along those lines. You have to understand, when you get a young player If he's a young Cuban player, a young Dominican, a young Venezuelan, when you bring him into professional baseball, they're not used to playing that full season, that very demanding full season that baseball has you play. So in the minor leagues, it's 140 games plus spring training, a shorter spring training, a shorter season. In the major leagues, it's a longer spring training with a longer season. It's probably close to 200 games. You've got to get your young players in really good shape to be able to take that kind of a load of play because they're not used to doing any of that stuff. So were it me, and I think the Sox will probably do this with Jimenez, You work on flexibility, you work on strength, you work on endurance, you get them ready so that their body is going to hold up. I think we saw with some of the younger players, and I'm talking about Lewis Robert, and I'm talking about Aloy, and I'm talking about a couple other guys down there, we saw guys whose bodies weren't quite strong enough to hold up over a full season. And we see that a lot with the young players that come over, as I say, from the Dominican Republic, from Cuba, that don't play the kind of schedules that they might play here in the United States, especially a guy that's in a good college program and then plays in a summer league. He's going to play a whole lot of games. He's going to be more ready to be able to assimilate that heavy workload. I think that's what's going to happen this winter with the youngsters.
All right. We'll leave it there. All right. Have a fun. It's going to be a lot of fun, Boston, being in town.
It's going to be great. And don't forget, Hawk Harrelson Day is going to be here. Mm-hmm. It's going Sunday. To be Sunday. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're going to do just a great job with it. In fact, I just stepped out of a meeting that we were talking about exactly what we're going to do for that. And there's a lot of nice things coming up on this homestand. So with the Sox playing good baseball, it's going to be fun times to be at the park.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Steve Stone on baseball.
I can't wait to see Eloy in the big leagues.
I know.
Nobody can wait.
By the way, if you haven't had a chance, he, the Players Tribune, which was started a couple years ago, where professional athletes can go to this website and pen articles about it, whatever they want. But Eloy Jimenez wrote one recently, and I highly recommend reading it. He loves Chicago. He's been playing in youth tournaments here in Chicago, even growing up when he was 11, 12, 13, 14.
Oh, wow.
He loves the town, so I know he's itching to get here as well.
So can you explain to me how they played with four outfielders? Who did they move?
Well, they moved a second baseman. They had a left, right, and then left center, right center. And he put it all the way to the warning track. He almost just said, forget it, I'm putting it over the fence. So, yeah, they went to a four-man outfield to try to slow this guy down because he's tearing it up down there.
That is so
if he
fun.
Doesn't get called up this year, what you're going to see is the White Sox wait about 3 or 4 weeks in the start of next year to bring him up. So if they do decide...
Because that's the Chris Bryant thing they did, right?
Service manipulation is what some people call it. That it has to do with time on a big league roster, and then when it basically prolongs free agency for the player, when they would become free agent eligible.
So the White Sox would get him for longer
under his deal. Control for one more year before you would have to go into contract negotiations and deal with a free agent type contract deal. So if the Sox do go that route, which they didn't with Kopech, they said, forget it, you're ready. Mm-hmm. This is the next step. Let's bring you up.
Well, pitchers, it makes sense not to do that with pitchers.
A little bit.
Because you're never necessarily going to have them that long for other reasons.
It's true. And pitchers are, injuries happen. You just never really know with pitchers. I think personally he's going to get called though. And I think it could happen this weekend.
All right. And remember, tonight, for Sox fans, the Sox are going to be on AM 1000 for radio. And it is the start of Wildcat football right here. It's the NCAA season. Well, it already started, right?
Because last week, and this is the real kickoff week, and this is one of the games that kind of kicks it all off.
I gotta say, this weekend is so much fun
I am posting college football Saturday and not moving
because it begins. And never. I'm going to the Ohio State opener.
That's awesome.
Because you gotta do something. And
you're gonna be there anyway.
I'm gonna be there. I just thought if they need a little help coaching, since Coach Meyer's not gonna be on
the
field.
X's and O's guy.
Yeah, I'd like to I'd like to get down there and help him out. You know.
Why not? I'm sure they'd welcome that.
All of a sudden, Roe pops his head in the huddle on the sideline. All right, boys.
You know those guys like sway back and forth like they do that huddle before the game starts?
The hype man. You could be the hype man for the team.
Yes, that's what I'm going to do. All right, you got to win today. They never understand a word of what they're saying.
What do the Buckeyes say? O-H-I-O? Is that the thing?
O-H. There?
Yes, that's
O-H-I-O.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I say O-H, you say I-O. That's how that goes. But the college football opening weekend, I couldn't decide where. I wanted to go to one of the big programs, home opener, just to see that, to get into the middle of that feeling.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a great year for Northwestern, I think. They're coming off of a 10-win season. They got a lot of the core back.
They're
we don't know who the quarterback is going
to
be. Yeah.
They've got a quarterback who's probably headed to the NFL. They got a chance to win the Big Ten West. It'll likely come down to them or Wisconsin. There's a ton of excitement around Northwestern football. I'm excited for this season.
Yes. Only thing that scared me was the cover of Sports Illustrated, which, of course, is a curse, had the Wisconsin front line on it.
Mm-hmm.
And some beefy boys.
You have never seen
bigger boys,
bigger white guys in your life. As they got, they were like four. You're like, oh my god, who are those? What are they feeding those people?
Corn.
Yeah,
force feeding the linemen with just firing corn down their throats.
These guys, they actually looked like they were drawn. You know, like in a Marvel movie. Uh-huh. Like all of a sudden, there's like the biggest person you ever saw. Like, where'd that guy come from?
Just breaking everything in their path.
No, that kind of gave me a little bit of
they're going to be really good.
Hope for Wisconsin's going to be really good, and it's going to be between Ohio State and Penn State, or actually
Michigan
Ohio State and Michigan State.
Michigan
and Michigan.
The
East those four,
is tough.
Yeah.
And we got Notre Dame, Michigan to kick off Saturday night. That'll be fun.
Yes, that's going to be. I tried to get to that game, but there are no tickets available. I just would like to point that out.
That's been sold out for like a decade.
I called the Pope and asked him, and he goes, "I'm a little busy with some other things."
Yeah, he's very busy.
Pull that. Yeah,
yeah.
He's got some other things.
You
on
and
his
not
plate.
The reading of the news. All right, so let's find out from Judy what's coming up at the top of the hour.
At the top of the hour, mm-hmm. Making it safe to get to and from school in Chicago.
Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis, yes. Right here on 720 WGN. All right, we'll keep our eye on that story here at Whitney Young High School.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out if there's apparently a hazardous material situation there.
Yeah, it's troubling.
You know what goes on there. And school isn't open yet for regular classes, but you know, Whitney Young, it's part of that academy system.
Very smart kids.
Could be students there for other kinds of things.
Sure.
And obviously, and there's also sports practice too.
Right. I live near the neighborhood. I see the sports practices over the last couple of weeks. Even they've been out there.
So, all right. We'll let you know what we learn about that as that develops here. All right. In the meantime, it's more important that we take care of. We're always told until you have any kind of details, take care of business.
True.
That's what they say here to us. I don't know why they keep saying it, but they do.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right.
Number five.
Al Gore is back.
Oh.
He's doing an exclusive interview with an LA TV station, and he was all about climate change and all that stuff.
Sure is.
But you get the sense when you hear the interview that he doesn't really like Donald Trump.
Take it from Mother Nature. Every night on the TV news is like a nature hike through the Book of Revelations.
What's your message to President Trump when it comes to climate?
Oh, my only message would be resign. I mean, I don't mean to be flippant about it. I don't think he is prepared to listen to advice about the importance of clean air and clean water. These are consequences that we are already having to live with. But what about our kids and grandkids? If we didn't act, what would they? How would we answer to them?
You'll be dead.
Well, the things he's going to resign over. I don't think it's climate change.
Yeah, you don't have to answer to them. It's like they, you know, kids, you fix it.
It's your problem now.
It's basically what's been going on for the last 100 years in America.
How about it?
Yeah, they'll fix it. But then they won't fix it because some people will be making dough off of whatever it happens to be.
Yeah. Sad.
To me, the craziest piece of this whole moment is the naked politicization of coal. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, coal is back. Coal is like coal's the new black is what it is. It's like, it's so exciting. It's the future, and there are no jobs in coal. Even if you open up all the mines and you did four times the production, it's being done by a robot because you don't want to put humans back in the coal mines.
Right.
I just think climate change in general and the environment has been politicized. If you
Oh, for sure.
The whole, all those issues. Yeah, you can't touch it without it becoming a political issue. No, it's not. It's about our planet.
Right. For decades, it's been a political issue. I mean, this goes on. You know, they go for, going to the 1970s when they started doing, you know, EPA, and there was this notion that we were going to start cleaning up the waterways. There was always somebody on the other side of that in some business that would be profiting from not having to clean up their stuff that was opposed to it. That's always been the case. So it is about finding a balance between business and workable solutions.
Right.
And it's always that yin and yang. It's always a fight. It's a negotiation. This, though, the idea of going back to an industry that we've already started to move away from, and that the jobs in the industry are for computer programmers. They're not for people climbing into the a tunnel with a big coal pick, right? Is not that, and the president's got some sort of like vision in his head of what that is, and it really does benefit obviously the investors and the, you know, the owners of the of these coal plants for a while, but it's only about selling a dream of a way that it, some sort of romanticization of when grandpa came home with black lung disease and they, you know, he had to die in his living room because they had no health care, and they somehow said, oh, those were such better days. What are they talking about? I've never understood that.
The president's got some of the highest approval ratings in the state, West Virginia.
Right. Exactly. In West Virginia, they worked. They didn't love the coal mines because they love the coal mines. They love the fact that they had jobs. Mm-hmm. But they were very... It's a tough circumstance for those folks. Right? I mean, and that's why they put machines in there. So that when the mine collapses and the dust, all the different things that can kill the miners... It's gone away. And so the jobs are moving. And the idea is to create educational opportunities for the people in those towns to be able to either, you know, work in that or some other industry that is going to be a burgeoning industry.
Right. Job retraining would be, I think, a great thing for the government to invest in.
It's always worried about. And he goes, I don't like the windmills because they kill birds. When is he ever concerned about anything?
Killing animals?
Killed? Yeah.
Have you seen your son's social media pages?
Right. You know, the windmills also could kill giraffes if your son didn't kill them all. All right. Hold on. I think we're up to this.
Number four.
Senator Lindsey Graham gave an interview to CBS where he defended his working relationship with Donald Trump, even as he condemned the president for his disrespect of John McCain.
I am going to do everything I can to help President Trump, and when he's wrong, I will say so. It bothers me greatly when the president says things about John McCain. It pisses me off to no end, and I let the president know it. The way he's handled the passing of John was disturbing. We finally got it right. I am not going to give up on the idea of working with this president. The best way I can honor John McCain is help my country.
That's, you know, he's right. He is right. Because the president is the president of the United States. You have to go through him. He demands that you go through him. There's a lot of presidents who just wanted to take the rest of the afternoon off. This is not Donald Trump, right? This is a guy that, you know, demands to be the center of everything that goes on. So Lindsey Graham, to some degree, is right. The reality that Lindsey Graham and Donald Trump are going to have to deal with is if there is a change in the political winds in November, guys like Lindsey Graham are not going to be so gracious with Donald Trump. If Donald Trump is seen as a political liability after November, which may not happen, he may be seen. I mean, he may hold his power base here. But if it goes the other way, you're going to see these guys all get off the wagon and do the Trumpian thing, which is to claim they were never on the wagon in the first place.
Right. Well, that's true. And you've seen him on both sides. Remember the times when Donald Trump was putting out his phone number, his personal phone number on
Lindsey
Twitter?
Lindsey Graham, yeah.
Took his phone number, put it out there, and then they became friends, and now he's speaking a little tougher about him.
Yeah, but Lindsey Graham's a survivor. He understands that he's got to kind of move back and forth in this.
Did you call the president and tell him to bring the flag back down to half staff?
No, but I called some people around him.
What could the president learn from John McCain?
What I would tell the president, you've got a lot of people you think are treating you unfairly, fight back, but you're going to have to be a big man in a big office. John McCain was a big man. Worthy of a big country, Mr. President. You need to be the big man that the presidency requires.
Why do we have to talk to him like he's a fourth grader? Why do we have to do that? I mean, come on now. You're gonna just have to be a big man.
This is a big job. You're gonna have to fill the shoes.
You're gonna have to roll with the punches. You can't just get mad about everything that goes on. You know, some things you have to let wash off your back. Sometimes if you make a mistake, sometimes you gotta own up to it.
It does seem like a fourth grader.
I mentioned what you're telling your fourth grader. It's not what you're telling the president of the United States.
So you're telling class president.
Right.
The class president, maybe.
Yes. I mean, it's sort of like,
okay, by the time represent you, everybody.
That's what happens when America hires a guy who'd never been in public office before to be president of the United States, because people in public office realize that when mistakes are made, they have to go back and appeal to their constituents the way that most people would appeal to their family, unless you own a family-owned business and everybody has to kiss your keister to keep their job.
Right.
I mean, it's a very different guy that we've hired here. And it may not. And, you know, in terms of policy, this is not his policies. He just knows how to win and be a bully and beat people up. It's all good. The policies all came from other people. And then he's testing them against his own instinct for what is going to make the maddest people in America happy. And that's how he's doing it. All right. We'll get to your three, your two, and your one. But first, Judy, what's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
An apparent chemical accident at a Chicago high school coming up at 5:30.
Good day.
Make Sundays your official night to tour the city. Watch Chicago's Best at 10 p.m. Then stick around for the latest in shopping, entertainment, and events. See Chicago 10:30 p.m. on WGN-TV.
All right. Speaking of the fall, we got your Northwestern football is taking to the gridiron tonight in West Lafayette, Indiana.
It's exciting stuff. Love college football. And love the Wildcats.
And this weekend is going to be just a ton of fun because you got the marquee matchup is going to be Notre Dame, Michigan, two top 20 teams in South Bend on Saturday night, national television. Very exciting stuff.
Top 10 matchup between Auburn and Washington. You got LSU against Miami. That's Sunday night. So there's some juicy matchups this weekend.
And Monday, too, right? On Labor Day, I think there's a NCAA game.
Sounds accurate.
I believe that is correct. And so
Virginia Tech, Florida State. That's another top 25 matchup.
Right. So you got it. I just love the college football figured this out, that you have to you get 1 week of supremacy over the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And
good point.
That's this weekend. And you make it into a festival and you bring everything in. And I think the best television show on television other than the circus. Which I think is the best television show on TV in these last couple of years on Showtime. But I think the best sort of standard long-form television show is ESPN's College Game Day. I think
it's awesome.
The best. So much fun.
You wake up early on a Saturday, put your sweatpants on, put on College Game Day, and don't move from the couch for the next 12 hours.
It does get you fired up about games I don't even care about. I'll just watch that and say, oh, wow.
You want to see if Lee Corso is going to, what hat he's going to, you know, what mascot... sweated in mascot head he's going to put over his head.
The signs that everyone holds behind him. I just love that.
And the signs are, you know, it's kind of funny because they started getting corporate with that a couple of years ago because there's actually paid for signs out there too that, you know, based on their sponsorships or whatever it is. But every once in a while, they'll still land on a dorm made really obnoxious sign.
Yes.
That is really good, and you get to see why college football is just so much fun. I mean, for the students, and it kind of takes you back, and you just imagine the hungoverness, because every one of those college students has been partying since Thursday, right? Thursday, Thursday, because no one has classes on Fridays, despite what they're telling you. If you're their parents, despite what is, I'm in class 5 days
no
a week.
Classes.
No. No, if they have a class on Friday, they're not showing up, because that's what you did. And don't lie. That's the way that everybody does it. So it really is. It's just fun to watch and fun to be, you know, part of the great, celebration of that. And I don't want to have to sit around. I'm going to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
I am not. I'm going to be a bold, faithful, brave football fan this year. I am not going to dislike football because the president tells me to.
Way to go. I want to go to some games because the tailgating in college football is some of the best. It's just fun.
Get to Northwestern.
I want
schedule.
To. Yes. I love that.
All right, I'm going to get to the rest of the top five.
Let's
on the
it.
Other side
There's
here
some fun
because
ones.
Yeah, we have a lot to get to. So we're going to it's a special extended version of the top five today. We'll get to your three and two and your one. But first, Judy has the WGN News at 5:30.
A level
brought
one.
To you by, hold on, I'm sorry. Brought to you by AppleChevy.com. Extended top five at five today. We're up to
number three.
Sheriff's deputy lost his job because he allegedly demanded a romantic relationship from a woman. And actually, when you hear this, I don't think you're actually going to think of it as a romantic relationship.
No.
It might just sort of be sex. William Miller, he's 38 years old. He faces a count of violating his oath of a public officer. He had arrested this woman, Ashley Roberts, back in July on a DUI charge. And she also had meth in her car, too. So he apparently, after the arrest, a couple days later, he called her.
Oh.
And was like, hey, baby, would you like to meet me? And then he pulled up in his pickup, gave her a Coors Light, because he figured she likes to drink.
Oh, gosh.
Right? Because she had already arrested her for a DUI.
Oh, boy.
So, no, sort of not like... Like, do you drink? Hell yeah, you do.
Did okay. he give her some meth too, or no?
No.
No, just the Coors Light.
He drove her to the woods, and that's when she thought, uh-oh, I better start recording this conversation.
Well, I know how I can get rid of them.
Well, how is that?
Well, I gotta get talk to the DA.
Well, I know that's how you can get rid of them, but me, on the other hand.
What's up to you?
Sure, no boobs?
Yeah, I'm sure.
God, mighty.
Sorry.
Can you give me the dignity of a boob shot?
Sorry.
One boob.
Please don't fault me for that.
The whole reason I gave you the beer.
Uh-huh.
The leverage.
Oh. What leverage would that be?
Well, I gotta get it sitting over there.
So what are you trying to do? Are you trying to blackmail me or something?
Yeah.
Oh, it ain't going to work.
It won't?
No.
I'm just messing with you.
Okay.
He got fired for that?
Awkward.
What? He was trying to help her get off of the charges that he brought by pulling her over?
Yep. And then he gave her a beer and he took her out.
Oh, gosh.
And said he wanted to see her boobages.
Mm-hmm.
And then when... She was like, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do it. And he was like, well, I offered you a beer. You know, does that kind of help?
Okay.
Because, you know, it's sort of like it's a beer.
This is an officer of the law.
He was an officer of the law.
Was.
Yeah.
Until today.
Yeah. Does sound a little like Cousin Cooter's smarter brother is what it sort of sounds
slightly
like.
Slightly smarter brother.
Oh, yeah. No, he was a law enforcement officer. And
until today.
He did a lot of job. Now, I thought this was all smart what he did. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, he wrote her a ticket. And then he said he would get her off the ticket if she'd show her boob.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
And then, she had one of them fancy recording devices. See, I don't got that on my flip phone. That's all I got left now, my flip phone.
You're the family hero that made good.
Of course, my flip phone, I lost it when I was gator hunting.
Uh-huh.
And then we had it, and then gator ate it. And then we had to cut open the gator, get my flip phone back. And then when we got my flip phone back, then we ate the rest of the gator.
Did the flip phone work still?
Not real good, no.
No, yeah, I didn't think so.
All right, so the reporter's name is Randy Travis on this?
Yeah.
Wow. That's ironic. Randy Travis handling a DUI story. Randy Travis of Fox 5. This is in Alabama or something, right? Is that Georgia? Same thing. Confronted this police officer outside his home.
Deputy Miller?
Yeah.
I need to ask you about a woman you arrested recently. Her name is Ashley Roberts. Remember her?
No.
You arrested her for drunk driving, and then you met with her... just last week, and
Cap,
you,
we'll be out here pretty soon.
You offered her a chance to get her charges removed if she did sexual favors for you.
Not me, buddy.
Well, yeah, we got the recording. Would you like to hear the recording? I've got it right here. You can listen to it.
You should have offered him a Coors Light.
Well, recording. What's a recording? Oh, man. How'd you like to have that moment?
Boneheaded move.
Yeah. I mean, what a
ridiculous
goof. You know what? He was the smartest one in the whole family.
Yeah.
He graduated
right.
from high school, everything. Rest of us all, we all got through fourth grade. All right. Well, Yeah, that's
good
it.
Luck to him.
It appears that, yeah. No, he really didn't.
I never made it.
No, he really didn't. All right, here we go. Checking in at
number two.
Dr. Phil is not buying what Piers Morgan is selling, at least when it comes to his hot take on Cosmo UK putting a plus-size model on its cover. Piers blasted Cosmo for making the 33-year-old Tess Holliday the cover model. He called the choice a load of old baloney, given Britain's ever-worsening obesity crisis. Dr. Phil, says Piers, who is a friend, that I did not doubt at all.
No.
Those two blowhards really need each other. Is essentially body shaming when he says it's wrong to recognize Tess in magazines.
Piers Morgan is a great friend of mine, and I think he writes brilliant columns the vast amount of the time. But I have to say, I disagree with what he's saying here. Does that mean that you want to have obesity from a health standpoint? Well, of course not. But let me tell you, you have to define what you mean by okay. When you say, is it okay, he's afraid they're sending a message that it is okay. It is okay. You know, she is still a quality human being. She is still someone that just because she is carrying more tissue on her body doesn't mean that she's not okay.
If you're not familiar with this model, she's 5'3", size 22, more than 300 pounds. And so people are saying that projecting her, putting her out there is projecting a vision of unsafe, healthy body images. But I just wonder where those people are when you see the models who are starving themselves, removing their ribs and injecting stuff into their body, that no one cares about that being an unhealthy body imagery. I mean, I get it. She's very outspoken. You know, she talks real. She doesn't say that I'm a vision of health. She doesn't try to pretend that she's the right size that you should be. She just said this is okay, too.
Yeah, they're just trying to sell magazines. They're going to sell magazines one way or the other here, and by putting her on the cover is going to sell. She's already a bit of a media personality.
She
is, too, right?
Yeah, very outspoken.
Yeah.
About all kinds of things. She tells people to f off and things like that. She's very she's just a very.
We're really in a really, really brilliant moment of world culture, aren't we right now?
These are the people that rise to the top.
Right. And people are like, why is it like this? Because we're paying attention to them.
We are.
Everybody now has access to, to the world through social media. And the cream that's rising to the crop in social media are people who are obnoxious. And then everybody thinks, well, we got to be like that. We got to be more like that, more like that, more like that. Right?
Kind of true.
That's what she's doing. Or she's defending, and she goes out there and everybody trolls her for being fat, then she trolls them back for being idiots. And
she makes more money.
Right. And then it's
more modeling contracts.
Right. And then we're all like, oh, let's take a look at that. Oh, fight. What the hell? There's a fight. The world has come down to being one gigantic traffic accident, and we are in a gaper's block. That's what's happened here.
True.
And then these two morons are, now I'm going to have Dr. Phil, going after Piers Morgan.
Piers Morgan.
Who, were the beginning of your deep tier cable destruction of America. That's just not right. I mean, and his whole thing, he was an early fringe, I mean that in the television term, strip syndicated star, because he would have fat people on and go, you should really lose some weight. or tell other people, you should get off the drugs. No, really? They should get off the drugs. You're going to put them on TV to show them on drugs. So everybody goes, oh, my God, look at that poor
he's on
SOB.
Drugs.
They're on drugs. Mm-hmm. Oh, and then he goes, you know what you should do is get off drugs. Thank you, Dr. Phil. I'm glad you got a PH frickin' D.
I think we need more Cousin Cooter. At least he's real.
I think that was Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil was originally Cousin Cooter.
Yeah,
remember Dr.
Related.
Phil was, I mean, before Dr. Phil was a big TV star, he ran a bunch of churn and burn health clubs in Texas.
Is that how he met Oprah? Because isn't Oprah the one responsible for?
No, he started, and then all of a sudden he started becoming a bit of a media, he got his PhD, and he just got, he'd like to become a therapist who told you the obvious thing when you walked into the office. And then charge you $175.
Well, remember, he was by Oprah's side when she fended off the meat industry, and you may remember she was during that trial and everything. He was always there, and then suddenly he had a show. There he was, Dr. Phil, telling us all what to do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And Piers Morgan.
Lose some weight.
Yeah.
Get off the drugs.
Thanks, Dr. Phil. That was great advice. You should stop cheating on your wife.
Really? If you want to.
Wow. Although that is, that's controversial in daytime television, though, because it really, Maury tells you to cheat on the wife, because then Maury you get does. To come in here, oh. and then you get to do a paternity test.
He makes a lot of money off of the cheating.
Right. Oh, hell no! Yes, that's, you're the baby daddy.
It looks just like him.
This is what's happened to our little world. This is what has happened to our little world. I want to go back to the good old days of the 1990s. Back when America was great. And we were watching a trial about a fallen sports celebrity who murdered his wife and her boyfriend.
Much simpler times.
Yeah.
America was great back then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
It's my new slogan.
You can always say that. America was great when you were 10 years old. Whenever you were 10, between 10 and 12. Actually, 12 is when your music taste gets formed. Mm-hmm.
That's true.
But between, so go back to your summer of your 10-year-old life, and America was perfect back then, right? Well, that's because you didn't know any better. Because that summer, they were impeaching a president of the United States for me. And I was like, isn't America great? It's like, who wants to remember it like that? Because, I wish we could go back to the 1970s when inflation was 30% and they were throwing a crook out of the White House. And America was ending the most ridiculously bloody conflict, over nothing. Oh, isn't that great?
They were throwing someone out when I was 10, too.
Right.
A little different circumstance, though.
Exactly. And now we're left with this.
You are the boss.
You're sure he's the boss?
I'm not doing it. I'm 5,000.
Let's hear it.
Andrew, you are not the boss.
I like when they celebrate that they're not the father.
I know, they dance. Right, they're like, woo!
Yeah, they run around the chair all excited.
It ain't me.
I'm not but the problem was he could have been the father. They're not there because they never had a sexual relationship, an illicit sexual relationship with the woman. They're just like, oh, I dodged this one!
The worst is when they bring three guys up and none of them are the father.
Right.
They're all kind of sweating.
Yeah, they're like, and then they announce it.
And they're all related, maybe.
I was going to say, the girl's cousin's like, oh, boy. Slipping away out of the back.
Oh, man. All right. And finally.
Number one.
In a ceremony true to the maverick that was John McCain. Political leaders, sports figures, family friends remembered the former senator as America's hero. In Phoenix, Arizona today. He was honored by his closest friends and some political legends themselves.
I fell in love with my country when I was a prisoner in someone else's. Senator McCain spoke these heartfelt words as he accepted the Republican nomination for president in 2008. They were the words of an authentic American hero.
Many of you have traveled the world. Look how the rest of the world until recently looks at us. They look at us a little naive. We're so fair. We're so decent. We're the naive Americans. But that's who we are. That's who John was.
Embrace the thought of love. Because John reflected love and love of a strong man. And that is nowadays hard to come by. So his legacy will go on for generations because people will talk about Senator John McCain is one of the greatest heroes in our lifetime.
It wasn't about politics with John. He could disagree on substance, but it was the underlying values that animated everything John did. Everything he was could come to a different conclusion. But where he part company with you, if you lack the basic values of decency, respect, knowing that this project is bigger than yourself.
He was America's hero. Senator John McCain from Arizona. He served his country with honor. He fought the good fight. He finished the race. He kept the faith. Now, my friend, we can finish the song. Sleep in heavenly peace. Sleep in heavenly peace.
The top five at five.
So, tune in to the Steve Cochran Show tomorrow morning, and every morning, by the way, but at 6:20 tomorrow morning, Lou Manfredini will join all the fixes for all your problems, including wedding planning and car buying consultation from Lou.
Really? He's going to do that,
too?
He's
going to do all that.
Wow.
He knows all that
stuff. Got the whole thing going. I got the wedding planning, man.
What a range. He wants to get in that. That'd be great.
Yeah, that's it. Hey, he does. He's got, he's a renaissance man.
He is.
He is, Lou.
So he's got everything going. He can dance and he can fix things.
Yes. So that's what he's
the perfect man.
That's what he's doing. And I would just say that the wedding planning, though, that's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, you don't want to get involved in that unless you're totally of the right mindset and have a lot of patience.
Now, I have a friend whose daughter's getting married in a couple of weeks, and he is out of his mind. He has the least amount of. They always say to the dad, well, you're just the one writing the check. No. Because all the constituencies, because I know this firsthand,
you
I
do.
Went through this a year ago.
Uh-huh.
All the constituencies come to you, and at some point they go, well, you're going to have to make the decision because no one else can decide.
What, like seating arrangements and things like that?
And everything.
Who's invited?
Final things to purchase. There's like last minute stuff that goes, you know, the easiest stuff is the stuff you do a year and a half out. You choose the room and the band and all the rest of that. After that, all the little stuff. Uh-huh. And then there's crying and there's tears and there's throwing of things.
Yeah. Well, it's like 1,000 decisions. And everyone's emotional about all of it.
Right.
Like somebody doesn't like the answer on all of it.
And it has to be perfect. It's always perfect. It's not perfect. Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 7:20 on 7:20 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Lindeman Chimney and Fireplace bringing you Judy Pilax News. Richard Roper is coming up, brought to you by Architect.
Nice.
Architect of Chicagoland. All right, it's coming up in just a few minutes. Let me see if I got this straight.
Mm-hmm.
I got a thing.
Something we got to figure out here. What's going on?
Yeah.
I didn't do it.
Yeah.
This one, Violetta, has nothing to do with. For once.
That makes her very upset, actually. Wait, what? All right.
Maybe
so
I did it.
The animal crackers. You familiar with the animal cracker?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, every child loves the animal crackers, right?
Been around 116 years.
Yeah.
Think about that.
So it comes in a box, right? And it's like
a little red box.
A little red box. But the visual on the box is the animals inside like a cage train car. Because the circus used to arrive in a town on the rails.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that was the way it would. And
it was an exciting time, wasn't it, when you saw the circus trains come in?
And then they would march the animals to wherever the circus, either they pitched a tent, which back then meant something different than it does now, or they went to, you know, some other kind of a place, some mm-hmm. other event space. And they would, the circus is in town. So mm-hmm. that's what the box of the animal crackers is based on.
Right.
And now activists.
Oh, jeez.
Activists.
PETA.
Are trying to get the animal crackers company to drop the cage.
They've dropped it.
From the box because it's offensive.
This is like the movie Thank You for Smoking when they wanted to edit out cigarettes from historical pictures and famous. Yeah. Like, it's a part of history that happened.
Yeah.
They always, activists got to ruin everything.
Nabisco's parent company is officially changing the design. There will be cage-free animals now on the front of the animal cracker package.
Well, I got one for PETA. They're not going to like this. I always bite the head off first.
Yeah. Well, I think we all do.
Yeah, you kind of do.
It's so enjoyable for some reason to do that.
Says something about about the human condition right there.
It's a psychological
thing. That's in a job interview. They give you animal crackers and watch you eat them.
In another room. They look through the two-way glass.
If you bite the feet off, you're that's like particularly bad to bite the foot.
Oh, see, I go for the head.
Because you hobble them first.
Yeah.
The head. If you bite the head off, the head actually is, that's the most humane thing to do.
Yeah, it's a swift kill.
Right. It ends the suffering for your little lion.
Oh, yeah. Now, if you're doing one little leg at a time, then the tail.
Like Donald Trump Jr. nibbles at the feet first.
Sets it on fire.
And then starts chewing on the tail. And then he leaves the head for very last.
One ear.
Sometimes he leaves the head out for 2 or 3 days so it could just sort of stay there and die slowly.
And he makes all the other crackers watch.
You're next.
Animal crackers.
The other crackers too, by the way, they're also watching too.
They're supporters.
Yeah, but there's just a whole thing that goes on. Richard Roper just stepped into the studio. The animal cracker moment here is it's the end. This could get Donald Trump reelected. It's the kind of thing.
The war on Christmas.
Right, the war on Christmas. The war on animal crackers.
Yep.
Are they going to demand that the animals, that there should be animals eating humans, right? That's going to be the next thing Nabisco's going to be forced to do. What is going on in my little world?
They're actually saying they've taken it even a step farther, the activists. They're saying that it does nothing to deal with pay inequalities and ethics and big business and the fact that the CEO makes 450 times more than the common worker at Nabisco.
I got it. CEO crackers.
Yes, eat the CEO's head.
Yes, where you get a guy in a suit, right? And then you get to decide whether you want to, you know, eat his feet first. Or maybe he'll also have a hand with just a bunch of money in it.
That's one cell phone and one idea.
Right. CEO crackers, and with his fly open too, so the whole Me Too thing, plus pay inequality.
You got to pick which one you want to eat first.
Look, I got an Elon Musk. Trade you for a couple of
Harvey
Bezos.
Weinstein.
Right. Oh, I got the Harvey Weinstein because you get the bigger one. Oh, that's good. I'll take the Harvey Weinstein.
That's like the big prize.
Yeah.
Oh no.
I love this idea.
A Harvey, just one Harvey, and the entire box fills it up. Special bloated edition.
They all found me attractive. They really did.
They really loved me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
Good God.
That's actually a great idea. CEO crackers.
So the level of corporate greed cannot be fixed with a new box design, claims one of the activists.
Oh, my God. All right, people.
Nothing is safe anymore.
Nothing.
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 Not even the temperature like we
release the goldfish. All the goldfish that are boxed on shelves across stores across America.
My goodness.
Release the fish.
I do eat the fish tail first or
small to
actually. I go for the head first on that too.
Yeah.
I go by handfuls. I'm shopping like 10 in at a time.
That's true, but if you end up with the last one.
Actually, the best way to eat it is you cut it in half. You rip it open, and then you kind of, one side gets soggier than the other, so it's kind of nice.
Goldfish?
She's talking about ripping out the long way. The long way. That's true. You can kind of squeeze it, and they kind of pop open.
I've been crossbreeding Swedish and gold. I have the Swedish goldfish. So it's
together?
Chewy and crunchy. Crunchy and chewy.
Yeah.
It's a little odd looking, but.
Yeah. That looks like a really good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could, it's all fish. But it just, it dries you out.
Teddy Graham's is another good one. If you miss the Teddy Grahams.
You bite one ear off at a time on the Teddy Grahams. Oh, you can't hear me anymore, can you, Mr. Bear? All right.
Wow.
Let's find out
what's happening in the world.
Let's see, what do we got going here? Don't tell me. I'll tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Just the traffic, I'm being told.
Yeah, why don't
now.
We do a little traffic?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. Telling you that Micah and Joe... Micah Mater and Joe Donlan. Joe, as we call him, no big deal, Donlan. Weeknights on WGN-TV News at 9. All right, Richard Roper has stepped into the studio.
Yes, sir.
And we got to, it's an interesting weekend because it's the end of the summer blockbuster season. And we've already kind of, it appears, we've already sort of made the turn toward awards season, right? And
that's true.
The important films coming out right now. And the Operation Finale, that does not look like a good, like, summertime going to the beach and I'm going to watch Nazis.
No. But I thought it would be of interest to you. You're a buff of all this sorts of material, as are many of us. So Operation Finale is another one of these movies inspired by... a true story. Now, it's set in 1960, okay? So it's 15 years after World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And as most people know, A lot of the chief cowards of the Nazi regime killed themselves. You know, Hitler, and I think Himmler, and Goering. So Adolf Eichmann, who was kind of in charge of the transport of hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Jews during the Holocaust, was at large. Adolf Eichmann, perhaps the most powerful and notorious and most despicable surviving Nazi, mm-hmm. for 15 years living under an alias in Argentina.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is all about the Mossad, the Israeli, you know, secret service, if you will, the operatives, the intelligence agents. They get a tip that he's alive and well. Now they got to figure out a way to get there, to capture him, and then to get him out of there and bring him back actually to Israel for right. trial. So this is the story here. Ben Kingsley, the great Ben Kingsley, plays Eichmann. And I think we got a clip here.
I'm guessing El Al is not an option?
El Al doesn't fly commercially to Argentina.
Perhaps if we had a good cover story, they could be convinced?
Maybe.
You said it's Argentina's 150th anniversary, right? So we get ambassadors, politicians, whatever, send them over there to say Mazel Tov, hurrah for independence. Then we sneak Eichmann on board, airlift him here direct.
What about airport security?
I'll disguise him to look like one of us.
He'll struggle.
We'll sedate him.
So that's Oscar Isaac you hear there. He was also a great young actor who's playing Peter Malkin, a real-life figure.
This is all true. This is a totally true story.
And it's, you know, it's almost Argo-esque when they talk about how are we going to get him out of there. So they're all going to disguise themselves as members of a flight crew or hitching a ride.
And they're not there to kill him. They're there to take him back
no,
to trial.
In fact, absolutely. And that, you know, and in many cases when they would find, when the Israeli operatives would find a Nazi war criminal, that was the end for him. They'd take him out back, literally out from, take him right out of his home and shoot him on the spot. But this was such a big figure, and this was seen as an opportunity for the world, really for the first time, to hear about all the atrocities of the Holocaust. It was a right. famous trial that ensued that was actually recorded and televised then around the world with right. more than 100 Holocaust survivors bravely testifying to what they experienced in front of that despicable monster who had to sit there and listen to all of it. Then we hang him. you know, it's a great story, and I encourage people, if you don't know about it, to read it, to learn more about it. Unfortunately, the movie, Ro, falls short.
Oh, no.
It's a 2.5-star film. It's you know, it's well done, but it's just so by the numbers. And so much of it is spent after they've captured Eichmann. They're in a safe house, and Oscar Isaac's character and Ben Kingsley's character kind of doing that back and forth where, you know, he's trying to get him to crack, and then Kingsley's character of Adolf Eichmann is kind of toying with you know, the Israeli who's captured him, and it just kind of gets bogged down then where you say, well, this would probably be a really cool stage play, but as a film, it's too static. So I can't recommend that you go to the theaters to see it. It'll be available on home viewing before the year is out. Maybe check it out then. So
Ben Kingsley, great in it because he's great in everything.
He's so good. He's so good. And, you know, he's played almost every side of every coin you could think of.
Right. That's what makes him so great.
Right. I mean, of course, you know, he played Gandhi, and mm-hmm. he can play Eichmann, and you believe him as the saint and the ultimate sinner. Right? I mean, he's that good. And in this case as well. And you know, there's just moments where you see just a little bit of the charm of the guy, or the intellect of the guy, and then you're reminded of what a monster he is.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. So,
can't recommend it as a film.
Did it kind of... went too long and too slow?
Too long and too much of it spent after the capture. I would have liked to see... Yeah, you know, it's one of those films, we talk about this a lot, where they get the end credits where you see the pictures of the real Eichmann mm-hmm. and the real Peter, and just a little glimpse of the trial. And I'm thinking, I want to see that. I want to see a movie more about that. Or obviously, there's been documentaries, but you know, there's incredible footage of the actual trial.
Okay, Kin.
Kin! This one's one of those that might go under the radar. Okay, basically, this little dude, he finds a super-duper gun in an abandoned building, and then all of a sudden he's on the run, and Dennis Quaid is his dad, and James Franco's the bad guy, and Zoe Kravitz is a stripper with a heart of gold. So it's basically... and then at the very end of this movie, I don't want to give anything away, but a huge movie star shows up in a cameo appearance that's really awesome. So it's very campy. It's very B-movie. It's so much a ripoff of Terminator 2 that they have the little dude playing a Terminator 2 video game halfway through the movie so that they can say, hey, yeah, we know we're basically doing the Terminator 2 story about this little dude who might have a big role in the future. Everyone's trying to kill him, and he figures out a way to survive.
It's sort of that. Now, again, you've seen the film. Yeah. I've only seen the trailer. Yeah. It looks like Ready Player One, too. It's sort of got that sort of
feel
to it.
It's grounded in a little bit more of a realistic world. A little bit more. But I was actually surprised at how enjoyable it was.
A crazy... The gun, though, seems unrealistic.
Yes. Oh, my God. Well, yeah, because it's a gun that can, like, you know, blow entire holes through, like, you know, buildings. So the bad guys are always just like in, you know, the Terminator movies. You know, the bad guys are bikers with knives and guns. And look at this little punk. And then he goes, and then they all get blown away. So it's really fun. 3 stars for Kin.
Wow.
If you're looking for just a kind of a wacky, fun thing with a really cool twist, check out Kin.
All right. End of summer. You have to have something at the end of summer that is still kind of a beach movie because it starts to rain somewhere. Right?
Yeah.
If you're like enjoying yourself or getting ready to go back to school. So that's all right. All right. I'll take that.
So there you go.
Yeah. I kind of thought it was curious that they moved the Operation finale to this weekend. Because this does, if it were better, you'd want to put it in that Schindler's List, October release, getting ready for the award season.
And the feeling might be, you know, what for people who are looking for, you know, a mature adult drama, it might do okay. Crazy Rich Asians is doing really well. Had one of the smallest drop-offs from week one to week two in the history of motion pictures.
Well, a lot of word of mouth, right?
Yeah,
people are seeing it and loving
it. Even the best movies usually have about a 30 or 40% drop-off. It had a 6% drop-off from week one to week two. I think Titanic was
always
the last time a movie did
Can't get into Princeton, but always overperforms.
Oh, here
that
we go.
Movie.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Is that what it's come to? How dare you. Crazy Rich Asians 2 is already in the works, by the way, the sequel.
Oh, it'll be different directors and different actors, right?
No, they're on board. Well, you know what?
It's
another one of those things. It's based on 3 books, so we're probably going to get...
Oh.
My guess is, because you know a lot of the actors here are great, but they're not that huge of stars when they signed on. It also said, you'll also be in Crazy Rich Asians 2, Crazy Rich Asians 3, and Crazy Rich Asians, the television show, in 2027.
People, I mean, you were an early adopter. You were telling people about it. You're telling people to take a chance on it. And it's a sleeper hit of the summer.
It really is. It's fun to see it do well. And we've had a lot of good, you know, kind of surprises like that that have done exceeding expectations, going all the way, of course, to Black Panther, which was supposed to do well and then did crazy well. And you might see one of the stars from Black Panther in that movie, Kin. That just narrows it down to 26 people, so I'm not giving too much away. I'm just saying.
Okay.
Michael B. Jordan. What?
Yeah. I think he's in the trailer. If you've seen, I think he's in the theatrical trailer. You know, you go and you watch it in the theater.
I never see these trailers. That's the problem with these trailers. Give everything
I only
away.
See the trailer. I go and I see one movie, and then I see all the, and then I decide from the trailer what I like and I don't like. I like the trailers as much as I like watching the movie sometimes.
You always have.
All right. All right. If you are a Chicago White Sox fan looking for them on the radio, you can hear them at AM 1000 this evening because it is the start of NCAA Big Ten football action and kicking off the Big Ten.